biggest stories, the best names, and all the big breaking news. The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon is on right now. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Happy Monday. Welcome to the show. Happy to have you along with us. Thrilled you've decided to join us on your Monday. So many ways to listen to the program. 960 on your AM radio. You can stream us at sportsnet.ca/960. You can also tell your smart speaker to play Sportsnet 960. And of course, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. The show is posted every single hour, right after the hour ends. Spotify, Apple Pods, Amazon, Google. Subscribe now and never miss a moment. We are live inside the iconic Electric End Controls downtown studio today and every day. It's brought to you by Iconic Electric End Controls. Currently hiring in Calgary and across Alberta with competitive wages, extended benefits. Visit iconicec.ca/careers. Got a busy show today, Logo. Will Nault, Logan Gordon along with you. Heavy list of guests. Of course, it's a Monday, so lots to chew on. We'll give you the weekend top five moments at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. Lots happening over the weekend from hockey, the NFL, and tell you that you're still in a weird time because the Flames didn't play on Saturday night. And they will be back in action tomorrow, though, and to chat about that and a whole lot more, we bring in our leadoff hitter for the Gemini Group Home Renovations. He is Peter Labardius. Brought to you by Gemini Group. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. Gemini Group, now offering air miles, reward miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. First of all, Lou, happy Monday. Hope you had a fabulous weekend. It looked like you were all over the hockey map this weekend, my friend. No surprise.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. Was in Chestermere for Female Hockey Day. And called a couple of games on HN Live with my friends over there. And then, after those two games was over, drove up to Edmonton to call two games of the final day of the Western Canadian Crown Under 15 Invitational. And had a great time doing that. But, you know, and then drove back this morning. Had a little visit with, you know, my number one man up there. And
yes, love it.
So it's good. It's good. Saw the Kurt Warner movie last night.
Hey, I saw that on Boxing Day with my girlfriend's family. Quite enjoyed it myself.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
About halfway through the movie, my girlfriend leaned over and says, "What the bleep is arena football?" And yeah, it's quite the game. Arena football is insane.
I saw him play in Iowa.
Really?
Yes, because for a long time, my sister, Sherry, lived in Des Moines.
Wow.
Yeah. So I saw one game that he played there.
You want to talk about a fast game? My goodness.
Oh, it's fun.
Yeah, it is.
It's fun. I enjoy it.
Okay, that's a good sidetrack and a good way to kick off the Monday program. As always, glad to hear that you had a fabulous weekend, and we're getting set for the Flames and Panthers tomorrow. And that's a good place to begin because our friend Eric Francis had an interview with Sam Bennett on his program, which, by the way, Eric Francis Mondays now goes at noon every Monday instead of 9 a.m. With our line shuffling, he's now at noon instead of 9, and today had on former Flame Sam Bennett, who will make his return to Calgary in that game tomorrow. And Lou did not play in the first matchup. He was suspended. And in this contest, he will play. And we'll start a conversation with this, as he told Eric Francis that things were going well as a Calgary Flame under Daryl Sutter.
When I was playing under Daryl, I loved it. I really liked playing for him. He was giving me a lot more opportunity, and I was really happy actually playing under him for sure. I thought you know, things were turning around for me for sure, and I didn't think I was going to get traded at the deadline after Daryl came in.
Which Eric would follow up and say, "Oh, is that the case?" And he said, "Yeah, I mean, I certainly, still knew it was a possibility, but did not expect to be traded after Daryl Sutter took over. Again, that interview is up at sportsnet.ca, wherever you get your podcasts, as well as you can listen to the entire thing. But Lou, as you hear that from Sam Bennett, what is your reaction?
Well, I'm not surprised to hear Sam say that. I'm not surprised that, you know, Sam Bennett would be a Daryl Sutter type player, but I don't necessarily think that, you know, that tells the whole story. I really don't. And here's what I would say. If you are a Flames fan, you know, the way this situation has turned, it can be a little hard to swallow, right? And I think we all knew that there was a possibility for that to happen. But I truly believe, and I don't know what would have happened, you know, under Daryl for a longer length of time. I don't. It's evident by that particular messaging from Sam that he was more on board, you know, than maybe he was for a few years with some other coaches, who all, by the way, had their own thoughts on Sam and why things didn't necessarily work out the way they should have. You know, the one word that always comes up in every conversation about this with Sam is opportunity. And, you know, well, I could talk about this for an hour. I really could.
Yeah.
Because I think it's a fascinating case study of player himself, young, frustrated, felt like he deserved more, didn't get some of those opportunities when he wanted them, played well in the playoffs, because I always believed that Sam's mindset in the playoffs was different. I think he was able to rid himself of maybe not getting certain line mates, not producing the way that he wanted, and I think that weighed really heavy on him. And I get it. I mean, listen, you know, even for us, well, we work in a business too where, you know, are you always utilized exactly the way you'd like to be? And sometimes the answer to that is no. And then how do you respond to that?
Yep.
And it can get to you. And it can take away when you're not in the right headspace to do it. And, you know, by the end of Sam's time, after another good playoff in the bubble, I just think it had reached a point where, yes, it could be easy right now to look at the Flames and go, you know, why did you do that? Why did you let him go? But I also believe, Will, that there are all kinds of situations. In fact, I've been in them myself where, you know, when things start to turn and it's not going the way you'd really like it, and you do get a little off course and your mindset goes to a, you know, probably a more damaging place, sometimes it is a change. It's fresh. It's different. And what happened for Sam, to his credit, is he needed a change. I believe that. You know, when he went to a place, and the great thing for him is when we make big changes in our life, when it gets off to a great start, that's what you have to feed off of.
100%. You're not 100%.
Feeding off of, right?
100%.
You're not feeding off of frustration and what it isn't. You're feeding off of what it is. The most difficult part for anybody in those kind of situations is, can you block everything out and make sure that your side of the street is clean and that you're playing your best? And when you're young, and even when you're older, that's difficult.
Yeah.
That's really difficult. So I guess, you know, the moral of the Sam Bennett story is, good for Sam. I'm happy for him. And I think it's the best thing that could have happened for him. I really do. I don't know where it might have gone with a different decision after Daryl came in, but the older I get, Will, and I know that our business is full of looking at things, you know, after they get done rather than when they get done. Well, this is done. So to spend a boatload of time, whether air time or between the years time, thinking about what could have been, there was a lot of time in his tenure here for more of what could have been.
For sure.
That time's over.
The other thing that just jumped to me, too, when you talk about, you know, feeding off something when it goes well, no matter where you are in your life, if you make a change or something significant changes in your life, especially when it was so frustrating and, you know, you just felt like you were kind of stuck, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
When you get the opportunity to do something completely new and fresh, obviously, it's a massive bonus when it goes well, but you just feel massively refreshed, and it just feels like, you know, you've got this new life into you, and I just can't help but feel that was a huge, huge part of what happened to Sam in Florida, and then you know, obviously see the early returns, and you just continue to feed off of that. So 100%, I think that's exactly what happened in this situation, and you know, as you say, what's done is done. But, you know, that's for sure for me. I mean, no matter where you are in your life, you do something 100%. That significant, it just feels like a brand new, almost like you got a new lease on life, right?
Well, and that's exactly what he got.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you get stuck is, you know, I'm sure a lot of people listening in their lives in different ways, everybody gets stuck. We all get stuck. And, you know, it's why you hear in sports vernacular all the time, it's about how you respond to being stuck. And that's why change works. But you're right. You know, I could list 100 different things where things start to feel mundane and you're not getting anywhere. And are you making an impact? And you so desperately want to make an impact and doing something that you love to do, and it doesn't feel that way. So how do you get it back? Well, I know even on a personal note that, you know, through some excellent help and some great coaching, and I wasn't ready to buy into it sometimes for a while, and I needed to. And that is really all you can do is control being the best that you can be. But if you get all cluttered in what everybody else around you is doing or what you're not getting, the only person who's going to pay is you. And it's hard. I'm not saying, listen, I know it's hard. So that for me is the Sam Bennett story. And like I said, I'm really happy for Sam, because there's nothing better in life than when what you love to do the most is fun and you're making an impact. And what is probably the least amount of fun is when something that was incredibly enjoyable and made you feel like you had impact doesn't feel that way anymore.
And Sam comes in feeling pretty good about himself lately, Lou. His team has been on fire, not to mention what Sam's done. Yeah, they're pretty good. They're coming in riding it. We saw what they did against Calgary in Florida, and it seems like they haven't lost since then. They have to be feeling good, and it presents a big challenge for this Flames team that hasn't played a ton of hockey lately and is looking to get things back on track themselves. We knew it was going to be a test when they headed into Florida, and now it looks like it's just as big, if not a bigger test, with Florida coming into Calgary tomorrow, Lou.
Well, I understand that Florida is kind of going about their business going into this game a little differently. They're coming in late is what I heard today. They might be located somewhere near the mountains right now, I believe.
Yeah, maybe Sam even said they were in Banff.
Right, right. So that would have been unveiled. Listen, they have every reason in the world to feel good about themselves. You know, they're playing right now in terms of scoring goals like Do they think that they're the 1980 Edmonton Oilers or the 1970 Montreal Canadiens? For some of us that remember, no, they're going incredibly well. But the thing, Logan, is, and I know it sounds like coach speak, when you're the Calgary Flames, your focus cannot be on the Florida Panthers. And what I mean by that is, yes, are you going to prepare to know that you have to play your best game? Absolutely. For sure you are. But that's the secret. It's not about necessarily what Florida does. Like, the whole theme of this conversation, whether it was talking about Sam or now talking about the Flames, so I think it really fits. It's what you do. That's what you control. All the Flames can control tomorrow night against a very talented team that seems like they could score from the co-op parking lot where I'm currently located, is you have to do and be at your best. And we know this team's very capable. And that's why the focus, now granted, we had a chance today, Logan, to talk to a couple of defensemen. But two things stuck out, and I want to get to both of them on this very topic. And number one was, Chris was asked about Ottawa and you know, being in this tough four-game stretch that they're currently going through. And what he pointed to, and I think we may have even seen it now, albeit different situation, different issue in Edmonton, is Chris felt like one team, despite playing once in 25 days, was a little more excited about playing the sport. And here's Chris on maybe what hindered them a tad against the Senators.
We've had a few hard days of work right now, and we're excited to play, and that needs to be the mentality when we play tomorrow. I mean, we played an Ottawa team who is more excited to play than us. They had a little more jump than us, and that needs to be us tomorrow against Florida.
Now, because of, Logan, what you talked about, the high flying, it, you know, it seems like, I looked again the other night, I'm on my way to Edmonton to call those games, and they've put up a six spot in the second period. And I'm like, what is happening? So, again, when your team game is in a bit of flux and you're going up against this group that is scoring it well, is it concerning? Absolutely. But here's Mr. Tanev on what it's going to take.
It doesn't mean each guy on the team is the fastest player in the league. It's being connected, moving the puck quick, closing quick, I mean, guys supporting each other quickly, doing everything at a high pace and fast is what we do. And I mean, they're really good at it. I mean, they have they move the puck well, they spread you out, and they have a lot of skilled forwards. So we need to match their intensity and match their pace, as you said. I don't think we were ready for how fast they played when we were in Florida, and we need to be ready for that tomorrow.
So there you have it. It is going to be a great challenge. And when the Flames are at their best, and you could say this about every team in the National Hockey League. I remember a longtime scout 10, 12, 15 years ago saying to me, Peter, most nights, if you truly want to examine how well a team is playing, take out a camera, because there wasn't smartphones then, take a picture. Take a bunch of them. If you find that a group of five is all in the picture in all three zones more often than not, chances are that you're connected and you're playing the game the right way. I've never forgotten it. I think it was 100% the way the Flames played a lot of hockey in the early going. And because they played that way, they had the ability to frustrate opponents and more talented teams in that regard. I mean, Think about what we've seen the New York Rangers do as of late. How much fun did they have on that Saturday night in Calgary? Now, if Igor would have mixed in a couple more saves, it might have been different too. I'm not missing that, but that's how the Flames have to play. They, you know, when you don't have 40 and 50 goal getters who in a couple of shifts can turn things around, you have got to truly play as a team. And that is the challenge, and it is an absolute must. But even if you go up the highway and you do have arguably the two most dangerous forwards in the game, guys, on Saturday night, could they get away with being in a game where they were probably more focused on turning 3-1 into 6-1 instead of knowing they had enough and making sure that they limited their opponents? The answer is no.
And I guess as I look at the Flames' schedule, and I don't want to get past tomorrow too much, but I mean, this has been a stretch where the Flames haven't played a lot of hockey, and you know, we talk about having that emotion and that time in between games. We would expect, I know it's hard when there's half capacity and there's lots going on, but you would hope this is a group that's energized and has that emotion that Daryl was talking about. You know, this is a team that recently beat you. You're in the midst of a losing streak. You know you're a good team. You've had lots of time to practice. You hope all of those things that the coach has talked so much about and that they've seen in practice, Lou, comes to fruition tomorrow, because unfortunately then you have another 3 days off before you're back playing regularly, hopefully into late January, into February. We want to see some of those things that we've talked so much about the last week or so come into tomorrow's game, right?
Yes. Logan, I would put it this way, and I'm glad you teed it up this way, is this. Whether it's Sam Bennett and what we talked about, whether we are talking about the Flames, which we continue to do, here's how it works. When you're going through a tough stretch, the fun meter drops. It's easy when you're going well and everybody's in a good mood and they're happy to be around everybody. You know, whether you're surprising teams or playing great hockey, that's easy. Life's easy when everything's going well. When you really have to band together is when it's not. And what it really starts with, and I've heard this from so many coaches over the years, and it's difficult when you have time and you're thinking about why it should be better, is you really have to get back to the basics. And what I mean by that is, hey, hockey's not heart surgery. It is an absolute, and it's not about a privilege to play in the league, but what it is about, have to remind yourself about being far more excited every chance you get to play a game and actually go out there and enjoy the process instead of being focused on what could go wrong. That's the balancing act. That's why it can be, when you get in a funk, so hard to get out of it, because the enjoyment level is much lower. But the only way to get it back is by convincing yourself that, you know, playing hockey as opposed to these grueling practices, and they had a grueling practice today, trust me, that's way more fun. So go out and enjoy yourself. Take the weight of the world off your shoulders. This is a good team. When it plays the right way, it's a pretty darn good team. And get back to that. But that's easier said than done. That's easy for me in a parking lot in a car. It's not easy when you're battling the greatest players in the world.
Come on, Wolf Cadillac.
Oh, absolutely.
It's got a few miles this weekend, no doubt about it. Before we let you go, Lou, we'll talk about, by the way, Panthers Flames tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll really break these
really tomorrow. Yeah, really, really dig into that one tomorrow. But before we let you go, a special night tonight in St. Louis, and I'd be remiss if I let you go and didn't ask you your thoughts as Chris Pronger will watch number 44 go to the rafters in St. Louis.
Well, you know, Chris is not only, was he not just an incredible player, but he is truly, and I haven't spent a ton of time with him. I know people who have. I think you might even have one of them on the air today. But back in the year, back in the 2005-2006 season, at that point, I was doing like a dozen Edmonton Oilers games on TV a year. A dozen. Okay, cover the league for a long time. And this has nothing to do with me. But what I'll tell you about Chris Pronger is not only was he as miserable and rotten to play against as almost anybody I've seen in the last 20 years, he's a brilliant person. He's an incredibly aware guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I had heard stories about, you know, him managing money and all kinds. Like, this is a really gifted, smart human. So, you know, I know he's out of hockey right now, but he was an incredible player. Obviously, I reflect a little bit on the time in Edmonton.
Yep.
You know, his brilliant play at the Olympics in 2002, you know, this guy's Hall of Fame all day long. All day long. And he did it in such a manner that there wasn't anybody in the league who wouldn't want to play with him, and there wasn't anybody in the league who would like playing against him. Brilliant, incredible skill, wonderful mind, awareness coming out of every place in his body. Yeah, you'd say I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, he'd be fabulous on TV if he wanted to do that. He would obviously, he'd make a great executive. But yeah, I mean, I think people would love to see him back in the game of hockey. And yeah, the one thing that always jumped out to me was just the way he talked about it. Never gave you a BS answer. Was always honest, maybe too honest for some people. And, you know, definitely a guy that would be an unbelievable TV analyst if he ever wanted to go down that path. Lou, you're great at what you do. Have a great rest of your Monday, and we will talk to you tomorrow on a Flames game day, Panthers and Flames from the Dome. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
You bet. There he is, Peter Labardius. He joins us every day to kick off this program. He does so thanks to the Gemini Group Home Renovations. Your home renovations should be a reflection of who you are. Give your home the Gemini difference. The Gemini Group, now offering Air Miles Reward Miles. Visit GeminiGroup.ca. Take a break. When we come back, live hockey on a Monday. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And, of course, with that comes a ton of afternoon hockey live right now on Sportsnet 1, Minnesota and Colorado. Tail end of the Red Wings and Sabres on Sportsnet West. A lot of that talk coming up at 2 o'clock, along with your top five weekend moments. Another fun one, Logan, in terms of the top five weekend moments. A lot to chew on from the previous weekend. We'll do that at 2 o'clock. When we come back, though, speaking of reunions, Sam Bennett's going to be here tomorrow. In the NBA, I'm not going to get that, as Kyle Lowry is not going to play against the Raptors, but the Raptors are playing better basketball. We'll dig into that next. We continue on The Big Show, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
You're listening to The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Coming at you live from the Iconic Electric and Controls downtown studio today and every day. Iconic Electric and Controls, where they treat every employee like family, an Iconic family. Apply to join the team at iconicec.ca/careers. My name is Will Nault. He is Logan Gordon. Tonight, Toronto Raptors are back in action. A 5:30 tip-off in Miami. Raptors and the Heat. And this was going to be a pretty special night. It's not obviously in Toronto. And even if it were, there's going to be no fans in the building. But this one's in Miami. One of the first meeting with Kyle Lowry against his former team. But Kyle Lowry's not going to play. The Raptors are without a couple of significant pieces, including Scotty Barnes. But to talk about that and a whole lot more, As we continue here in hour one of the Big Show, down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline we go. Joining us now is the NBA editor for Sportsnet.ca, Stephen Luong, joins us right now. Stephen, thanks so much for doing this. First off, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you, man?
We are good. I guess just to kick things off, I mentioned it in the intro, it's not going to happen tonight. He's not going to play, but it's really too bad. It was a much-anticipated reunion with Kyle Lowry.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, circumstances. Lowry out with personal reasons, according to the injury report. Not really sure what could be going on there, but it was, like you said, like in the lead up there, it was going to be this pretty special night, you know, the first time a true kind of franchise icon taking on the Raptors, and unfortunately we're not going to see it. And it looks like we now have to look forward to February 1 when Lowry's back here in Toronto. And although we're not sure yet if we're going to be allowed to have any fans in the building.
I was going to say, I mean, that's a night where you're obviously, you know, we can't control COVID-19. We can't control what some of the protocols are or some of the restrictions. But you got a feeling that, man, that would be pretty heartbreaking if there were no fans in the building on February 1st.
Yeah, I mean, we already got a small taste of it, you know, when Serge Ibaka and Jonas Valanciunas have come back after kind of long absences away from Toronto and in empty buildings, and it just looked weird, right? And like they would play like the tributes to the players without any fans in the building, and like, you know, normally when the tribute is playing, the crowd is up on their feet, standing ovation, and there's always like if the player is on the bench, they always, you know, wave to the crowd, you know, and it was a huge ovation. And I imagine for Kyle Lowry that they would have to, like people just would not sit down. Like this kind of ovation would probably go all the way through, you know, however long the quarter would last for. Like these things usually happen probably, you know, sometime in the first or in the second quarter, but like during one of those first breaks in those quarters. And I imagine like people just would not, like for Lowry in particular, people would not sit down. They would not shut up because like it would just be an overwhelming, I think, adoration for, you know, probably the best player in franchise history.
No doubt about it. And obviously we're not easy shoes to fill when Lowry eventually did leave Toronto. And it was about this time last year when we felt like this was going to be the reality and he was not going to come back. And now it's funny because the Raptors have kind of turned their play around. They've won 7 of the last 9. And at the face of all of that is the guy who in a lot of ways is kind of the direct replacement. What have you seen, not only these last 9 games, but I guess all season? Fred VanVleet plays more minutes than anybody in the league. He's averaging 21.9 points, 6.7 assists, and he's shooting over 40% from beyond the arc. What are we seeing right now? And I guess the overall bigger picture emergence of Fred VanVleet.
Well, I think, first of all, with VanVleet, what he's doing, he's just kind of taken his game to another level, but he's very similar to what we've seen of him over the years, right? Like, he's always been a great shooter. He's always been a great leader. And he's just kind of, I suppose, filling the big shoes. He is, you know, just taking it to a whole other level. But, like, us here in Toronto, we've seen it for many, many years. This is kind of like an evolution for him. What's most important, I think, for him, and the reason why he's getting and garnering a lot of all-star recognition and will probably, you know, at least be a selection from the coaches, is that the rest of the league is very much taking notice. Like, I think he's probably the top guy on the coaching report, on scouting reports, and coaches just around the league, like just unprompted, when they come visit Toronto or you just speak to them pregame, they will just start talking about Fred VanVleet. And I think that's the ultimate compliment for a player like him, particularly from what his humble beginnings were, you know, as an undrafted player.
Stephen, I wanted to, I don't know if you have any word on this or if there's been anything lately like this. I know with the Raptors heading to Miami tonight, there's of course going to be conversation about Goran Dragic. I know since November He's been placed on personal leave. I don't believe he's back with the team. Do we have any indication when or if he's going to return to Toronto?
There is absolutely zero indication when slash if he's going to return to Toronto. And I think that's just a very, very unfortunate situation. Like when the Raptors did make that sign and trade for, like Lowry for Precious Achiua and Goran Dragic, obviously Precious Achiua was the big, crown jewel piece the Raptors were getting back. And he's still a very young player. And we're still trying to it's going to take a few years for us to really figure out just what he actually is and what he can actually do to help the team. But I thought Dragic was a really nice kind of pickup for the Raptors, because I figured he'd be a guy who can come in off the bench, help this, like what was going to be and what has proven to be a bit of a struggling second unit. And then, around this time, he would have played enough and showed enough that like he could have been used in possibly a bigger trade package. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, he got stapled to the bench by Nick Nurse. So I guess they just didn't see eye to eye, and it came to a point where the Raptors just kind of allowed him to say, like, you know what, I'm gonna step away. That this really isn't working out, and I'll probably just kind of say my piece at the end of the season. Thank you for everything. So it's just a very unfortunate situation, because I thought he could have been a very, very valuable asset for, what was going to be, and again, what is kind of now proving to be a rebuilding team with, borderline playoff aspirations. And he could have potentially been a guy they could have used in the trade market to, maybe be more aggressive buyers in at the trade deadline.
We're chatting with Stephen Luong here on Sportsnet 960, the Fan. It's the Big Show with Logan Gordon and Will Nall, talking about the Toronto Raptors. They're taking on the Miami Heat tonight. You can watch the game on Sportsnet. A couple of guys I wanted to mention with you, Stephen, and just sort of get your feel on their season so far. Will mentioned it earlier. He's not with them right now. But Scotty Barnes, obviously, some people were surprised by the selection of Scotty. But what have you made of his first year as a part of the Raptors?
I think because of Scotty Barnes, I suppose best way to put it is his ascendance. He's changed the trajectory of I think most thought the Raptors could be, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because here's this raw kid, who can basically do everything on the floor, and particularly. Like the book on Scotty Barnes was that like he's a great athlete, and that's definitely checked. Everyone had that. He's a great playmaker, and I think everyone has very much seen that. But no one thought he could shoot. Like he never really showed he had much of a jumper at all in high school or at the collegiate level. But he can. But like he's showing at the NBA level, when open, he can shoot that three. And I think that completely changes everything about what the Raptors like think they can do. And right now, like obviously not playing, but when he was playing, he was kind of, sort of figuring things out with the Raptors kind of returning to health, maybe he's being a little too unselfish, or maybe at times he is forcing things too much. He's trying to figure things out, how to play off Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby with all of them on the floor at the same time. But I think he's innately understands how to play basketball, and he will eventually figure that out. And if he can continue to shoot the ball as he was showing during the stretch when the Raptors, were a little more shorthanded, I think the Raptors' ceiling just automatically raises because he's suddenly this piece that is just like way better than I think anyone thought he was going to be.
The other guy I wanted to talk to you about was a guy that only played in 17 games for the team last year, but got a big contract this offseason, and it looked like he's going to be an important part for this Raptors group going forward. That's, of course, Gary Trent Jr., just over 16 points per game. I know there were some questions about the team giving him that big contract in the offseason. Some were wondering if there was enough time that they had seen from him for him to be this sort of scoring threat that the Raptors hoped he would be. What have you made of his season so far, and has he lived up to expectations in Toronto since re-signing in the offseason?
I think he's actually probably exceeded expectations, because when Gary Trent Jr. came in, from that small sample size we saw of him, we saw a guy who can kind of create his own shot and is really, really willing to shoot the ball, and, you know, for better or worse. And we still see some of that here with some, you know, like long twos, contested shots, and the shot selection may be, you know, you may worry about it, but what you cannot worry about, and this is the pleasant surprise with him, is just how good a defender he is and just how active he is. And, you know, and like, I believe he's still like among the leaders in deflections in the league. And that speaks to just like how hard he's willing to get into his man. And I think that's the reason why Nick Nurse loves him. And that's why, like, where at the end of the season, there was thoughts of, well, does Trent come off the bench and help kind of a middling secondary unit that's probably going to struggle to score? Like absolutely not. Like, Trent is going to be a starter, and it makes this starting lineup that much deadlier because of what he can do on the defensive end. And then in like late clock situations, Van Vliet and Siakam are, you know, like well covered. You can kick the ball to him, and he can make something happen. He's one of the few Raptors, I think, who can really go out there and, you know, create his own shot, usually for himself, but sometimes for others, but it's normally just for himself.
And also a lot of talk coming into the year, mostly because of the big contract he signed and hadn't really lived up to it to that point. What have you thought overall, and I guess more lately when we've seen his game improve a little bit, are we seeing a better all-around defensive game from Pascal Siakam?
I just think we're seeing it all around. This is the best version of Pascal Siakam we probably have ever seen in general. Like, he just seems so much more comfortable. Like this is even dating back to, you know, like when he was named an All-NBA player, you know, like prior to the bubble, where it feels like all the trouble really started. But his shot selection is like, is much better than it ever was. Like, he's not jacking as many threes. And yes, he's taking a lot of mid-range shots, which is analytically not great, but they are really great when you're hitting them at the rate that he does. He seems to be like a mid-range master right now. He's much more aggressive on the glass, both offensively and defensively. And that's something that we haven't seen yet. We haven't seen him kind of put these big rebounding numbers ever before. And so that is very encouraging. And I think the most encouraging thing is the fact that I think he's matured as a player to understand when to look for his own shot and when to kick out. Like, as a playmaker, he has never been better. So he's suddenly become this multifaceted threat that everyone always wanted him to be, because you can see all the tools in his repertoire. And I think he's kind of finally putting it all together. And he's never been a better player than now, in my opinion.
Just a few more. Stephen Leong, NBA editor at Sportsnet, our guest. Raptors Heat tonight, 5:30 tip-off, as Toronto looks to continue their good vibes. They've won 7 of the last 9 games. And I mentioned the feel last year is about this time. We kind of, you know, started to accept the fact that it was probably going to be the end of Kyle Lowry's time in Toronto. A little bit similar this time around, Stephen, as this team is on the playoff bubble and will be battling for a playoff spot, it feels like, from now to the end of the season. As we get closer here, and obviously a lot can still happen, as it's not like it's tomorrow or anything like that, but as we get closer to the deadline and the talk about being a buyer or a seller, where do you come down on the Raptors and what their approach to the deadline should be?
So the most likely scenario, in my opinion, is that they're just going to stand pat, because I think that like they've had a very injury riddled season, like a season where they haven't had a lot of time to assess what exactly that they have to, you know, like make that kind of big decision whether they're going to sell or buy at the deadline. But considering the fact that they're only 3 games out of like fifth place in the Eastern Conference, you know, like firmly within a playoff spot, not just in the play-in range, which they're in right now, like, I would like to see them be a little aggressive and be a buyer, possibly maybe dangle a guy like Chris Boucher or someone like that to go out and add, you know, like a scoring wing. Like I've said multiple times, I think their second unit could really use a boost. And I think if they were to go and maybe get someone like a, I don't know, Terrence Ross, right? Like a Terrence Ross reunion from Orlando to help a second unit that really needs, I think, a big boost offensively, that could possibly, you know, put them over the top to maybe make a big run at us and secure a playoff spot proper, which, you know, obviously is very, very good to show guys like a Van Vliet and Siakam and Ananobi, like the core that, like, hey, we're back, we're trying to win again. And also to help the development of a young player like Scottie Barnes to show them, you know, like what this Raptors culture is really about. Like this is a team that is about winning. There's an organization that's about winning. And I don't think there's any better education for a young player than to kind of put them through the fire of what postseason basketball really is.
Kind of final one for you, and then we'll let you go. We appreciate the time, as always. Tonight against Miami, we talked, obviously, no Kyle Lowry, no Scottie Barnes. It's going to be a bit of a different feel, and certainly will not have the Kyle Lowry against his former team vibe. But just what are expectations for tonight? Raptors have won 7 or 9, as I mentioned, coming off a massive win on the weekend over Milwaukee. What's your expectation, and what are your thoughts on tonight against Miami?
I mean, you mentioned it right there, like that win against Milwaukee. I thought that was tremendous. Like the Raptors were shorthanded on the second night of a back-to-back, and they took it to the defending champs. Who by the way also happened to have Giannis on the team. So I expect the Raptors. You know, like it's tough to get a feel on who they actually are these days, because you know, like, they lost the Pistons and then they go and beat the Bucks. But overall, just like with how well they've been playing of late, I can't imagine them, you know, like mailing it in against the Miami Heat. Particularly, like, even if Kyle was there, I think the Raptors would still have a very good chance, because I think like Siakam and Van Vliet are both playing at like an exceptionally high level. You know, like you could say all-star, all-NBA level. And I would think that the Raptors are going to be out there, be very competitive, and, you know, probably come down to like a, you know, last few minute situation where they can win the game.
Great stuff, Steven. As always, we appreciate the time. We'll let you go and enjoy the game tonight.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys.
Steven Leung, NBA editor over at sportsnet.ca. He's our guest on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Come on in and enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery also available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. They'll play again on January 29th. Probably a good chance Lowry's at that game. And then, of course, back in Toronto on February 1st. We talked about it a little bit there. But as we close out this segment, Logo, we saw it earlier this season. Zach Hyman in an empty building in Toronto was waving after a video tribute. We're going to see it tomorrow, even in Calgary. Yes, there's going to be fans in the stands, but by no means is it 100% capacity. Obviously, there's the no food and drink sales. It's just a different time. And these reunions are always a fun story and a fun side note to the actual game. But it is disappointing in certain situations. You're not going to get that. And we'll see what happens February 1st for Lowry in Toronto. But just knowing how much he means to the city of Toronto, the Raptors franchise, for many, is far and away the best player in franchise history. He'd love it to be not in front of an empty building on February 1st.
No, and with all due respect to the guys that you mentioned there, Will, say a Sam Bennett or a Zach Hyman, Sam Bennett or Zach Hyman won't go down as...
No, it'd be like a Ginla coming here in an empty building.
Exactly. Yeah. That's 100% right. It's those two guys, as you know, deserving of one, sure, and part of the game, and you know, nice to remember them for their time, sure. But Kyle Lowry coming back to the Toronto Raptors and to Toronto as a member of the Miami Heat deserves a certain amount of gravitas and, you know, just some hype and some passion, everything into it that goes with having fans in the building. And will it be as special the next time? Probably not, but you can sit there and say, oh, well, hopefully next time there's fans. I hope they're the first time there's fans in the stands. Those are just the ones that I think fans want to remember and want to have those memories of. I'm sure people here in Calgary have vivid memories of the game where Jerome came back as a member of the Boston Bruins, yep. Right? Will anybody walk away from tomorrow night with vivid memories of Sam's return to Calgary? All due respect, probably not. That's just, there's just a different caliber of player. And Lowry has entrenched himself so much into Raptors culture and this generation of Raptors fans. I hope he gets the return that he deserves, because those are the really special ones that we like to see as sports fans, Will.
Kyle Lowry not in the lineup tonight. The Miami Heat, though, welcome the Toronto Raptors at 5:30. Toronto has won 7 of their last 9, including a big win over the weekend in Milwaukee. And so you just heard talk about the second half of a back-to-back. It's a gutsy win thanks to a triple-double from Pascal Siakam. We'll see if the Raptors can make it 8 of 10 with a win tonight against the Miami Heat. We'll take a break. When we come back into Hour 2, we go with your weekend top 5 moments. Monday Night Football closes out Super Wild Card Weekend. And, of course, the Toronto Blue Jays not making headlines these days, but we've got a very, very big decision to make, and it could be as early as this offseason. All that and more as we go into Hour 2 of The Big Show next. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.